I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Ben Swan. He is with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. He writes about animals for the Santa Fe New Mexican, and this is our monthly animal segment. Welcome.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Pleasure, as always, to be here.
And joining us by telephone, we have a special treat. Colleen Plum is with us. She is a photographer, and her new book is called Animals Are Outside Today. It's published by Radius Books of Santa Fe, and there's going to be a book signing at Radius Books on October 29th. That is this coming Saturday from 4 to 6 in the afternoon, and you, Colleen, will be here. Welcome. Let's talk about this very unusual book. It's a book of photographs of animals, but it's not animals in the wild. It's not like nature photography at all. It's more like animals in zoos, animals in paintings and in sort of popular culture, trapped animals, dinosaur bones in museums, animals as food, you know, meat, things like that. How did you come to this idea of doing this book?
Well, I originally started thinking about all of the ways that animals are woven into our lives through sort of their representation. So I started out like thinking about this idea of artifice and why we surround ourselves with the artificial, and what does that serve? You know, what sort of instinct are we satisfying by having just even the substitution around us? And then it just grew. It just grew over the years where I kept digging and getting more into photographing the real animals. And the more I looked, the more I would see how everywhere I look, there's some form of an animal, or how it is used as a resource, or how we use them and how they're woven, you know, into our life.
This idea of artificial animals, you know, painting them, making little animals, and why we do that, and sort of contemplating that, what did you come up with?
Well, I think that it really just evolved from my personal, you know, just my life, and then having kids, I saw how many animals were around us in a different way. You know, for instance, just going to this market to get some milk with my daughter, this Middle Eastern market, and there's a head of a lamb in the case. She had a friend with her, and they were looking at its eyeball, and I was like, oh God, I have to come back and photograph that. And then I thought, oh, I should buy it. I'm going to buy that lamb head. And then they both got all upset at the prospect of me carrying this head out with me. So I sort of had to do it on the sly. To buy this head was $3, which I thought was absurdly inexpensive. You know, I thought, geez, a head of a lamb, you know, what a lamb used to mean as a sacred offering versus, you know, it's now made, I guess it's a soup, you know, when you boil the head. So, you know, I brought it home and photographed it, and then we brought it to the park to bury it and said a prayer and thanked it, you know, to give it somewhat of a better send-off. But also that, you know, I'm not saying like it's horrible to make soup with a head. It's just that, you know, what was the life of that lamb? You know, that's where my questioning is what sort of a life did that lamb have? And hopefully in an ideal world, the lamb could have a good life, a happy life.
Well, and this is one of the things that I think your book brings up, is the question of, I mean, everybody dies, every living thing dies, and there are some dead animals that seem to have died naturally. There are dead animals that are domesticated and used for meat. There's ones that maybe were trapped in some human-made enclosure that never would have died if it weren't for these complex human structures. And it just leads to this whole contemplation of what any animal's life is like. And even if the picture doesn't tell you that, you wonder how it has suffered or not.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, that I did, you know, one of those threads became about death. And that's, you know, part of the reality. I mean, there's a realistic view of like, okay, we have animals, we've used them from the beginning, you know, when we first hunted and killed animals. And that, you know, this idea of being so cut off from those early experiences where there was a sacredness or an importance and a value to every single part of the animal, and that You know, its life, it was just sort of a given that it had a natural life. Well, we've become so far removed from giving an animal a natural life that it's hard. I mean, it's hard to not feel really complicit in this horrible life that animals have just by being part of our society. If, you know, just reading in Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma about that, if all of the factories had glass walls, you know, things would change pretty quickly. We would see. So there's this cutting off of seeing. We don't want to see the real head or the eyeball. We want it to be as far removed from what we could have identified with it, you know, like it identified with its suffering. Or so, like Bella on the road, we were driving to go ice skating, and I saw this dog out of the corner of my eye as we drove past, and I was like, oh my God, that was a dog. Like, I couldn't believe it. And it was so sad, and the kids, we kept going, and I dropped them off, and I went back. And so that one speaks to, like, the reality that there are roads, and there's death, and that animals they're harmed. We take the land, and they don't have space, and it's really not fair, I think, you know, to animals. But I did just read that there's a decline in deer's getting hit by cars. Did you hear about that?
Because of the way they're building roads?
No, they're either drivers are getting smarter, but they think that deer are getting smarter. That the deer are getting
That's
smarter.
That's nice.
So, I know. It's kind of a phenomenon, you know.
I guess,
like,
it's yet another example of natural selection. Deer who know how to avoid the roads tend to reproduce.
Right, they look both ways.
Well, I would have to say that, you know, looking at your book and your art is very intriguing. And, you know, I won't deny that there's a few images that are very disturbing to me. But
Ben's a vegetarian.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm a vegetarian who grew up in Alaska who's used to the spring when the moose are crossing the roads and everybody hits moose and there's pickups, files of bodies and things of these poor calves that are being hit. So I can really relate to the idea of animals being hit. But I wanted to say, your photos really spark a curiosity, I think, in the person looking at them, trying to, you know, figure them out, you know, trying to understand, is this a joke, or is this, are you trying to hurt us, or are you trying to, you know, and right. I love that idea that there's always a mystery to each image, you know, and what, how that brings you into where your state of mind was at the time. So I really appreciate that, and also the fact that the animals are so a part of our lives. I was only disappointed that I didn't see any Hello Kitty images in your book. And I love Hello Kitty.
That is my 5-year-old. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, and you have a little daughter and no Hello Kitties. That's funny.
I know, that's funny. Well, we have a lot of Hello Kitty around the house, believe me. But that's, you know, a good point, that curiosity. I think that's what, that it is so complex that I'm not going to say, you know, don't do things. My wish is that we will eventually get to a place in our culture where we're more conscious, where the walls will be glass, and we won't be able to eat food that is factory farmed. We just won't be able to. I think that is my hope, you know, that we will eventually get to that. So it's maybe baby steps or raising the questions, you know, as the first, which a lot of people are and have been. You know, I'm just part of the line of trying to hopefully raise consciousness in a somehow.
Definitely, that's a part of it, that conscious living, which is not just taking things, oh, this hamburger didn't ever exist in a living being, but being aware constantly of what you are, how you affect it, how you affect change as well. If you don't want to be a vegetarian, or if you want to be a vegetarian, you stop eating meat and somehow really embracing, you know, what you're doing each step of the way. So your book really helps people think about those things.
Oh, good. I mean, I hope. I'm not a vegetarian, but I do have, I mean, I have a hard time eating pork, and that I'm very conscious of where I get meat, you know, and so I serve meat. I'm still evolving in that department. Like, I've tried to be a vegetarian, and it doesn't, I feel maybe I've done it wrong, where it doesn't feel good for me, health-wise, but, you know, it's not like I eat that much either, which perhaps smaller amounts or, you know, that it's really unsustainable the way we've been eating meat and the way that it's going. So,
but I love the fact that you had this ritual with this lamb's head you know, and you took it out. And you know, like many people think that if you say thank you, if you thank the animal or whatever for its body, that it somehow makes it better. And it does, I think, in a lot of ways, because it's a conscious decision.
Yeah, I mean, it gives it that sacredness. And that if we ingest food, you know, I believe this, that if you ingest food that is brutal, with brutality, you're eating that. And I know that, you know, I've read a lot of the Buddhist teachings that when you ingest, it becomes part of you. And so I just read about the eggs that hens, they just sort of have it the worst. I didn't even know that. I mean, I get free-range eggs, but if my 10-year-old had it, you know, she'd have us on a farm raising so that we could look the animal in the eye that we will later eat, and that somehow that feels better and is more just because it had that. This is in Poland's book too, that idea of a happy animal.
Yeah, I'm still looking for, and it's probably around, but happy pig bacon.
I can only think of Babe.
I could maybe eat, yeah.
No, but there is a, I mean, I think one of the contrasts in your book is between how terribly we treat animals on the one hand, and I mean, it's not that you have pictures of factory farms and things like that, but so many people know about it, and that context is in our mind, and there's so many urban pictures and roadkill and things like that, how badly we treat animals on the one hand, and how much we sentimentalize them on the other hand, and adore their cuteness, and the front picture of the cover picture of the book has somebody wearing a shirt with a deer and a little fawn emblazoned on it, and it's just a kind of not overly disturbing, but just strangely, slightly disturbing book, and it's really great in that way.
Yes, I think it is really contradictory. You know, we can eat them and kill them and cage them and do, you know, test them, and then, you know, love them and have these deep relationships with animals, and you know, care. You know, they become so important to us, and right, and then the icon. You know, they become the symbol, like. We use them so, you know, in so many ways. I think like corporate symbols, use the eagle and all the what an animal can symbolize. So we sort of take what we like, you know, we'll take these powerful symbols and use them. But then also, you know, not really. Zoos are really the hardest thing because you go there and it's like, oh, this is supposed to be a majestic lion, and yet it's, you know, wasting. They're so they just seem so forlorn and not healthy looking. So it's
they're sort of the way we are when you put us in a room with a lot of junk food and television set.
Yes, exactly. It's not a good recipe to be in a in a cage or on display or and without exercise. I think, you know, you lose your mind, but. You know, but then it's endlessly contradictory complex, I guess, that would we, at the expense of the one animal in a zoo, you know, which is terrible, does it create more caring for animals in general? I mean, I don't think it's really worth it to that one animal because it's so bad for them. Personally, you know, I think that zoos, we have to come up with a different way. But there is a value. I mean, I've been doing this video project on elephants, and so there is people, their breath kids are filled with glee when they first see an elephant, but to the expense of those creatures, you know. So it's very complicated, and, you know, I couldn't begin to have the answer. You know, zoos have been important to me. Like, when I was a kid, I remember going. I also remember being really bored, really hot, wanting to go, you know. So maybe zoos, I've noticed they're moving. Like, they always have water park things going on or other things. So maybe zoos can be turn more into that type of thing. And
they can evolve.
Yeah, they have evolved, and they really are working on the habitat. And I was thinking about you being hot. I always love to go into the bat caves and watch the bats. And nice and cool.
Yeah.
Right, it's cool.
Colleen Plum is a photographer. Her new book is called Animals Are Outside Today. And there's some nice text in the book as well. Colleen Plum will be at Radius Books here in Santa Fe for a book signing this Saturday, the 29th of October, from 4 to 6 in the afternoon. And Radius Books, well, let's see. You can just give them a call at 983-4068 here in Santa Fe and find out where they are. They're right downtown. Colleen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait to be in Santa Fe in a few days.
We'll see you then.
Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you very much.
So, Ben Swan, there's a lot of things going on, of course, as always, at the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society, and it's also Halloween coming up on Monday.
Yes,
so
it is.
Is that a big day for pets, besides the fact that some people do tend to dress them up in silly costumes?
It is a big day for pets. Well, every day is a big day for pets, but as you know, Halloween gives everybody the opportunity to do things like Howl-loween. And, you know, do kind of little jokes about the Halloween things. But I did want to, before we get into the very traditional.
I have to tell you, my dog Milk has started howling in his sleep. He howls like a wolf while lying on
that.
His
you
chair. It's so messed up. Anyway, go ahead.
So what I did want to, before we got into the traditional Halloween stuff, talk a little bit about our Dia de los Amigos. That's our Day of the Dead altar. At the shelter, which we have this wonderful shelter volunteer, Mariah, and I've always mispronounced her name. Sorry about that. She's from Spain, and she, you know, traditionally it's not been part of the Day of the Dead to honor
Mireia.
Mireia, yes. Sorry, thank you. I meant to phonetically spell it out, and I forgot to. But traditionally, it's not been, you know, honoring animals is relatively new. And I talked to her a little bit about that, about the Day of the Dead, how we convert that into our paying tribute to beloved pets. And she was very clear in the fact that, you know, as pets have become part of our families, they, you know, more and more, it's just become almost a tradition in itself that we want to honor those beloved pets and tell and remind people how beautiful they are and how much they impacted our lives. And this is the second year that she's really taken it on herself to create these wonderful altars with photos and candles and flowers and little tributes to the. And we encourage everyone in the public to come by and leave their photo and write a little tribute to their departed pet, and to just remember them with a smile on our faces and to celebrate their lives and how much they touched us.
A lot of people have their pets' ashes, if the pets were cremated, and they build little altars in their houses and things like that. And they do that down at the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary as well.
Ula has a wonderful altar for all the wonderful pets who have gone through Kindred Spirits, and that's in the same vein. Yeah, and I know a lot of people who have altars. I have an altar of my beloved pets, and I bring them in and take them to the altar. But anyway, that will be up until November 1st.
Oh, okay. So people can come by with pictures of their animals.
Yes, and, you know, maybe a little story if they want, maybe, you know, to leave it there. So they're remembered. They always are with us in our memories, and so why not publicly?
On a much more practical note, Halloween. Make
yes.
sure your dogs don't eat chocolate or raisins.
Yes, not just that. There's also all kinds of candies.
They shouldn't eat any candy.
Any candies, no.
But especially chocolate and grapes.
Yeah, they do actually have dog biscuits that are sort of in shapes of candies and things like that, which is kind of confusing for some animals. So just, yeah, there's a few tips I kind of wanted to tell people about, you know, especially that's the number one about candies and chocolate and things like that, to make sure those animals, and also, you know, even organic pumpkins and stuff like pumpkin guts, they won't kill a dog, but it can get them really sick. You know,
really?
Yeah.
I used to feed, when my old dachshund had pancreatitis, we would feed him pumpkin.
Well, it's usually
canned pumpkin.
Cooked pumpkin.
Yeah.
I'm talking about raw pumpkin.
Ah, raw pumpkin is different.
And remember when you have like your candle and your pumpkin, watch out for those tails. They might knock over a pumpkin. They might start a fire.
And set the entire neighborhood on fire.
Luckily, it's not like Christmas, but you should be, you just aware of those things. And you know, trick-or-treating is a lot of fun for everyone, but not necessarily for dogs or cats. All these people that come into your door, knocking on your door, ringing your bell, wearing these, imagine it from a dog's perspective. whose really mission is to protect your person. Right. You have all these people coming to your door wanting things.
Ready to play a trick, too. Ready to egg your house.
Exactly. You dogs love tricks. And they love their treats. But it's best just to put them in the back room or someplace safe where they won't have to be... you know, that stress level is very difficult for them. And then if you do want to take your dog or cat trick-or-treating with you as you go through the neighborhood, just remember that, you know, make sure that they have proper ID, their collar, their tags. You know, you're really busy with your kids. You're watching other things. Sometimes dogs aren't the best beings to have with you when you're out with a bunch, which crowds, you know, they might get lost. And also think about reflective tape for them, so if they're walking across the street with you,
tape their mouth shut,
tape their bodies, or put lights on them, really cute lights they have now, just so drivers know that they're there. And if you do want to go into it, and I love, okay, everybody loves, many people love dressing up their dogs and their cats in Halloween costumes, you know, but some dogs just don't like it. So the best thing to do is
a lot of dogs don't like it. I tell you that one year I bought my dog Honey Dalmatian sweater. It was a white sweater with black spots, and I put it on her for Halloween. Then I went out to a Halloween party. When I came back, she was lying there without the sweater, and the sweater was completely vanished. It was never found again. It's either she ate it, or she buried it, or she flushed it down the toilet.
Well, Mary Charlotte, you know, some dogs have different fashion sense than we do. What you might think they look great in, they just don't like that at all.
Well, I think what it is dogs have a very different experience of having things around their bodies. It's
exactly the point.
It doesn't feel good to them.
So that's one thing to test out. You know, anything that inhibits their movement, their hearing, their eyes, things like that. There's a lot of costumes out there that are very elaborate. They don't have to be that way. A scarf, a bandana is fun, right?
Right.
So you don't have
a neckerchief.
A neckerchief. You don't have to be so crazy.
And if you absolutely must, a tutu.
Tutu, terrible. But and there, you know, everybody loves to do a Halloween party, and there's several pet stores that are having some Halloween costume parties. I think Zoe and Guido's party is from 4 to 6.
For animals and people.
And Tekatoo is also having, from noon to 3, they're having a costume party. These are just fun things to do if you really want, you know, animal-specific events that, you know, they know what to do. They can watch your costumes, things like that. And at the shelter, we're not doing anything, you know, I've been encouraging people. You know, I have really cool hats, so I kind of wanted to do another costume contest for the shelter employees, but they just are not into it, you know. So I'll just have to wear the hat another time. But we do have some specials going on for the Halloween. So
tell us about that.
Well, we do take photos of dogs in nice dogs that like it in nice costumes. You should look at our website. We're upgrading.
Yeah, I guess some dogs like it more than others.
They do like a sweater, you know.
Try to get any of my dogs into a sweater, but never mind. Go ahead.
Sometimes some dogs find that comforting. Well, we have this, you know, throughout the month we're having the, you know, it's Adopt-A-Shelter Dog Month. And on our website, I've been doing a new little factoid about dogs, you know, what you can do with them, what you shouldn't do with them. And it's just fun things to do. And in that vein, we're letting people pick the discount, their adoption discount from a big Halloween plastic pumpkin. So it's a way of getting, you know, just having fun with the bird. And then at the, you know, we have a Look What the Cat Dragged In, which is our resale store. And everybody who comes in with a costume, they get 30% off. You don't even have to scare us.
I could come in as Ben Swan wearing a cardigan.
You could, and you could wear my new hat that I just got.
That's right. Ben Swan, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a picture of him and put it up on the website. So by the time you hear this, there will be, or in a few minutes, there will be a picture of Ben Swan in his very, very dapper new hat on the website. And there's great stuff at Look What the Cat. Look What the Cat. I would say Drug In. That's not right.
No. We just call it The Cat. Makes it easier.
All right.
Yeah, every morning I wake up and say, what funny hat do I want to wear? But this one's a little dapper. I think, you know,
super slick.
The whole 50s kind of revival has really gotten back into it. And I happened to be at this cat conference in Los Angeles over the weekend, and had to pick up this beautiful new hat. Anyway, Mary Charlotte will take a photo of me, and unfortunately you'll be disappointed about what you see, because I do have the face for radio.
You look good in that hat, I'll tell you that. Now, let's talk about, and also because I've been putting pictures on the website, santafe.radiocafe.org, let's talk about some of the animals, because I want to put those, he's holding up two pictures, and I'm going to put those on the website as well. These are a dog, a light dog and a dark cat.
Yeah, and, you know, when I heard that Mary Charlotte had the capability of putting photos on her website,
I think I've always had it. I just didn't know how to do it until about a week ago.
Well, it might have been a little bit longer. But I thought, you know, when we talk about these animals, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and she only gives me 900. So I figured
Let's talk about these animals.
Oh, yeah. Polo, you know, here's Polo. Polo is one of our longest resident cats at the shelter. He's not a resident cat. He's looking for a home. He's been there. He's been there for over a year. And he's a black Maine Coon mix.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Nobody adopted that cat? He's
so
cute.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they get overlocked.
He's got a long, fluffy tail and green, seductive eyes, and he's a fluffy black cat.
Yeah. And so Catherine, one of our adoption counselors, was talking about him. A lot of people love this cat. And some cats just, you know, don't connect with people. He's got a little bit of, you know, he's got some issues. Like, he's slightly nervous about handling and doesn't like people pulling him off his, you know, onto their, you know, pulling him up off the ground.
Swinging him by the tail.
Yeah, exactly. But he is a great cat. He loves to be indoors and outdoors. He gives kitty kisses, love nips, and, as Catherine says, may surprise you with every day with his antiques.
Oh.
He's just a sweet cat. And then this guy, Charlie Bear, has really fallen in love. The shelter staff has really fallen in love with him.
I would take that dog home in a minute.
And look at that festive
He's wearing
kerchief.
A neckerchief.
Yes. He's playful, curious, friendly, and a water lover.
How big is he?
Well, he looks like he's, I would say, 40 pounds.
He's a blonde dog with pointy ears. Looks like he has a little bit of shepherd and chow in him. Imagine that in New Mexico.
Yeah, and he's got a very inquisitive face, doesn't he? He's very curious about a lot of things. So he's is a mix of Siberian Husky and Chow Chow. They call him the king.
Ah, Siberian Husky. Okay.
Yeah, they call him the king of the pool because he loves to play. And he's somewhat independent, but he's very loving. He's 2 years old, tan and white, and he can be a little shy. But, you know, we have this wonderful behavior department, and eventually I'll get him on, and we can talk about, you know, all the things that we're doing to really just a lot of our dogs that come in through various reasons, and the trust has been broken a little bit. And it takes some time to understand that people are good, too. And so that's why our behavior staff has been really working with these dogs, and they really turn around within 24 hours, or, you know, some dogs take a bit longer. But you would be surprised if we have a humane walking. A lot of volunteers do our humane walking program. They just take them around, and they love their surroundings. And then I also wanted to say, you know, in Albuquerque, they've had some terrible hoarding cases this summer. And it's really impacted the shelter. And we have been fortunate enough that we've been really working hard on getting homes for our critters. And we've been taking some animals from Albuquerque. Last week, we took about 12 cats. And this week, just yesterday, we picked up 11 dogs. And most of them are little dogs. We call them Littles, Cheese. And in fact, and I think there was one boxer.
Chew up.
Cheese, yeah, which I have. Olivia is a very sweet dog. And the behavior director was telling me that when they had selected these dogs, they picked 11, and this couple had been following them around, and before they left the shelter grounds, somebody had already adopted 2 of the dogs.
Oh my goodness.
So you know the quality of these dogs are going to be great. And I just wanted to say that the more dogs and cats that we can find homes for, the better we are able to serve Albuquerque and help other relieve the overcrowding problems there.
I've just started reading a book called Inside of a Dog, What Dogs See, Smell, and Know. It's not a new book. It's a few years old.
It's an awesome book.
It's really good. Yeah. And the main point, I mean, I can't fully recommend it in the sense that I haven't finished it yet, but so far, so good. I mean, anyway, I hear it's a great book, so I do recommend it by Alexandra Horowitz. But the main point of it is that everything a dog does is an attempt to communicate, and
in
the fact that we don't understand it means that we need to learn, because once we learn what they're trying to communicate, then we can deal with their behavior issues or problems.
That's always a first step in understanding what a dog is trying to tell you.
Yeah.
And they sometimes mimic us, but is it comprehension? I don't know. And that's why Temple Grandin, also an author who's written Animals in Translation and many other books, she provides, as an autistic woman, she provides a lot of insight into the how our minds work, how their minds work, and how they can connect. That's an awesome book to recommend.
Ben Swan is with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. He writes about animals for the Santa Fe New Mexican. And how do people get in touch with you and with the shelter?
I'm at the shelter every day, but they can always email me at bswan@sfhumanesociety.org. And go to our, we have a shelter website, we have a shelter Facebook, and you can also send story ideas and things to scoop@gmail.com. That's santafescoop@gmail.com.
santafescoop@gmail.com. Ben, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Mary Charlotte, it was awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.